Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Thursday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Appreciate you joining us today. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by Justice Mosqueda as we break down the state of the Packers, as we get into the bye week, and look at special teams and why they are the worst and why they're stupid and everything else. We'll get into all of that in just a moment. Before we get there, the Packers did have one transaction-ish, I guess, that took place. It wasn't a transaction that they made, but remember, they released Brant Banks the other day. Justice Mosqueda and I do go over this at the end of today's episode, so we talk about it in a little bit more detail. But just to kind of give you the short of it, he was waived the other day. The Tennessee Titans, who are number one in waiver claim priority, did claim Brant Banks, and he is now a Tennessee Titan. I'm sure Green Bay was probably hoping they were going to get him back in the practice squad, and that did not happen. He is now a Tennessee Titan, so Brant Banks no longer a Green Bay Packer. They have a couple open roster spots. They'll also have, they're going to have to fix a practice squad spot probably where they need another offensive lineman now that Banks is gone. But just wanted to obviously fill you guys in on that Banks is no longer in Green Bay and he is now a Tennessee Titan. Now it is time to talk to Justice Mosqueda. Fantastic conversation as always. I know you're going to enjoy it. Thanks for being here. Check out Justice right now. All right, we are back with the one and only Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on acmepackingcompany.com, of course, on social media at JUMOSQ. Justice, it's been an interesting couple weeks. We will dive into all of it, but before we get there, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. Wish we had gone into the bye on a better foot, to say the least. But yes. Outside of that, nothing to complain about. Oregon Ducks doing pretty well. That was a nuts game.
Yep.
Watched that at like a massive sports bar in Portland. Felt like it was a playoff game. So I'm juiced.
Love that for you. To be fair, on the Cowboys Packers side of things, we were literally probably a half quarter second away from it being worse than what it was. So yeah, it's still not great, but it was literally this close to being even worse, which would not have been fun either. It does feel like it's definitely better than a loss. I'll say that much. Like there's panic for sure already, it seems, but a loss I think would have induced even more panic, and I don't know if I could have dealt with it.
No, and that's probably why Matt got real conservative at the end of that game, and was like, a tie hurts less. A tie hurts less than risking a win.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. I know exactly how I feel about that philosophy. I don't like it one bit, but that's another story for another day. Let's jump right into Packers Cowboys. Obviously, all the key talking points have been discussed ad nauseum by now, but what were your sort of overarching takeaways from that game and stuff that's still maybe sticking in your side or that you still need to get off your chest?
Well, the passing game really the offense looked pretty good. This is our best rushing performance by far. There was some interesting stuff on the offense that I'm still a little worried about. Like they try to play 12 a lot, 12 personnel, and they would put Musgrave and Kraft together on one side of the field. And their whole mentality was basically, hey, we're putting two extra guys over here. So you put two extra guys over here. Well, the Cowboys spun into weak side rotation a lot, so they're spinning opposite of it. Because they didn't think the Packers would run behind Musgrave.
Rightfully
so. They were kind of right. Musgrave, I think PFF had him as like a 40 grade or something like that. And that was just off of his offensive grade and stuff. He got a massive uptick. We had seen for weeks, sort of the ships passing in the night of Musgrave snaps and John Fitzpatrick snaps. And then all that went to hell in this game. And they're like, yeah, Musgrave is our tight end too. And I don't know if they want that one kind of back. They did some interesting stuff schematically. They use Kraft and Musgrave a lot more in the slot and as outside receivers than in the first 3 weeks of the season. Obviously, didn't lead to a lot of production on the Musgrave end. He had 6 yards receiving to show for all that. But I think they, you know, a lot more screen game, stuff like that. And I think they wanted bigger bodies on the outside to kind of take advantage of that. We saw a lot more Matthew Golden in the slot and Dontavian Wicks on the outside in this game. That wasn't true in week three. So it's kind of flip-flopped back and forth now for the past 3 weeks, you know, basically since Jaden Reed went down on who would kind of be the slot, who would be the outside receiver. I don't think we have clarity there. They can do both. And I don't think Christian Watson coming back into the mix potentially as soon as next week is going to help us get a clearer picture of that situation.
Nope.
So it's going to be interesting to see what this wide receiver group looks like. You know, once everyone gets healthy, Emmanuel Wilson, you know, pretty good day. They've really started to knock off the Chris Brooks snap count. I mean, we saw so much Brooks in the first 2 weeks of the season helping in protection and stuff, and that's kind of been gone the last 2 weeks. I'm a little worried that they're going to move on from him whenever, you know, Marshawn Lloyd comes up, whether it's the 53-man roster or the game day active, right? They need that guy on teams. Yeah. Like, they really need their guy on teams. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of my thoughts on the offensive side of the ball. Defense, like, for giving up 40 points, okay? And I understand that that's a pretty big qualifier. Like, Green Bay didn't allow that many explosives. Like, there weren't that many plays of, like, 15 plus. Like, it's just, you know, just like chop, 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 chop. Like that's how that game felt, where it was, it wasn't even like third in manageables. It was like second in manageables. It was a whole lot of like second and four conversions. And then the team just not being able to get on off the field. Obviously the Devontae Wyatt injury was huge. Nasir Stackhouse, I think, ended up playing like 42% of the snaps down the stretch. So after Wyatt went down, bad is a way to put it. I think Stackhouse got like a 30 grade from PFF. I put up the clips up at APC of you know, all the pass rush snaps, all the run defense snaps that he had. It's not good.
No,
basically like the first four runs that he was on the field for, they ran it right at him. You could argue that two of the rushing touchdowns went, you know, buzz right by his face. That was a pretty big deal. There was just messy tackling sometimes. And then obviously, you know, Hobbs allows the two touchdowns. I thought he got benched. I forgot he went down with the injury.
Yeah.
And then he never ended up coming back. Carrington Valentine ended up replacing him. And then he had the play where in coverage, he ends up slipping on the tackle attempt. And, you know, you get the yak touchdown. So, nice couple little punches to the groin there at the end. But personnel-wise, you know, there's not a lot changing. Outside of the big Stackhouse jump and snaps, like, there wasn't anything too interesting from a rotation standpoint. Hobbs got, I think it was, until Hobbs got hurt, which I think was, like, midway through the third or something like that.
Yep.
He was an outside corner on every single snap but one when he played in the slot, because it was like one of those weird cheetah things where, you know, they like to play Hobbs in the slot, you know, an obvious passing down. So I think they want to play Hobbs on the outside. Yep. And that's not great, because if you look at any of the numbers, man, like Hobbs might be a bottom 10 corner. And I know one of the 10 was Xavier Howard, and he just retired like today, like an hour ago. So,
yeah.
Not great. Obviously, no. He's still, you know, coming back from injury, all that stuff, but yeah, not good.
It's funny because I was calling for Carrington Valentine on Twitter. I'm like, put in Valentine, and then Valentine comes in and it wasn't great either for CV, which was not encouraging. It's funny though, because defensively, again, we're doing a lot of heavy lifting here for, again, a 40-point performance. I get that. But I watched this, and so first of all, if we're going to really do some heavy lifting here, two of the points are not theirs. It's 38. Another 7 is due to the turnover that is like 15-yard drive or whatever. That's like 31. So it's a little bit different than 40, not by a ton. But the interesting part of this one is they start, all right, take the touchdown before halftime away. Yes. I put that more on the offense. They start punt, 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 touchdown, punt in this game. So it's like, and that one, the touchdown drive was like, they made them go 95 yards on 11 plays, which they did. Kudos to them. Tip your cap. But they certainly made them earn that one touchdown drive. And then because you had the touchdown before half where Dallas is in it and everything's at their disposal and Devontae Wyatt goes out, like now they start putting stuff together and it, I think, looks a lot worse at the end. I think if it's not for that touchdown before half, I think Dallas, they're assuming everything else kind of goes the way it did, they're down 20-9 at that point, 21-7 if you don't have the stupid special teams play. And Dallas is probably going pass heavy mode and Green Bay can get into all of their crazy blitz packages and whatnot. This probably looks a whole hell of a lot different. It's not excusing everything, but it's just, there was a world, I think, in which this looks a whole heck of a lot different. Unfortunately, it didn't. I didn't love how they responded to the adversity of the turnover and then immediately allowing the touchdown of losing Devontae Wyatt and things like that. But yeah, and the other thing I'll add on top of that too is, yeah, to me, when I went back and watched this, the things that stood out to me, cornerback play and tackling. Those were the two. If the cornerbacks play just a little bit better, it's not a 40-point performance. If the tackling's just a little bit better, I think you get them into some longer downs and distances, and it probably feels a little bit better too. But those were the two things that stood out to me.
Yeah, and the other thing I would add is just the D-line just gassed. Like, yeah, just playing so many plays. They were, by the end, they were spent. Like, midway through the fourth, they got a gun and no bullets. Like, it was, you could have done anything to that team. Yeah, to your point, like, you can look at the drive chart and they have like one drive of over like 15 yards. And then it's just like 75, 80, 75, 80. Like,
they got tired.
They just couldn't stop them from that point moving forward. And this is kind of one of the things that we talked about for the past couple of weeks, right? Where I was like, if one of the D tackles goes down and you can get these guys where you're not in an obvious passing script and you could still run the ball and stuff, like, you can kind of wear down this defensive line right now because they don't have super deep rotations, especially a defensive tackle. And we for sure saw that on Sunday.
You're the person to ask, did Ben Sims play any special team snaps in this game?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I would have probably preferred, just even, I know that this is going to sound benefit of hindsight or whatever. So he played 7 special team snaps in this game. Mm-hmm. Played 7 special team snaps. And I would have preferred Warren Brinson to be active in this game over Ben Sims. Just to have depth there. We've talked about this prior. Like, they just don't have a ton at that spot. And if one guy goes down, you're down to 3. And I know LVN could kick inside a little bit, but it's not enough. To me, to have a number 4 tight end that plays 0 snaps of offense and 7 snaps of teams when your team sucks anyway, I wonder which, I bet these were all like field goal protect too, weren't they, or something?
No, he plays kickoff return.
Okay.
He plays kickoff return. Yeah. Gotcha. But that's kind of it.
Kick return. Yeah. They were all kick return snaps, nothing else. So literally all kick return. So, I mean, you've got to be able to find somebody else who can play his 7 snaps of kick return so that you could have an extra defensive tackle active during the game. I don't know, just maybe, again, that's a little hindsight-ish, but we've literally been talking about this before where it seems like they're very thin and one defensive tackle injury really, really taxes them. And we saw that in this game.
No, I'm 100% with you. And I don't know. I mean, things get weird because it's Stackhouse, man. Because Stackhouse is this defensive tackle that you only want to play like 10 snaps a game. So it gets so funky with that. I don't know if you need to have 5 guys active on game day or if you just need to have Brinson up instead of Stackhouse.
Right? Or just like a better number 4. Like, this is my, I think this is my new thing. I might want to, like, the trade deadline, like, I don't need, you know, I'll take a Dexter Lawrence if somebody wants to give him, but like, I'm talking more of like, can you find a TJ Slayton, Jerron Reed-esque player at the trade deadline that's just a solid number four defensive tackle. Somebody that can give you like 25, 30 snaps in a pinch and it's not going to look brutal. They're not going to be able to run right at him. They're going to provide just a little bit of pass rush presence. Like that's probably like a fifth, sixth round pick at most if something for something like that, maybe even a seventh. Like I think I'm
or just like a vet in a bad situation who wants to get the hell out of there. Like we saw and that with like Whitney Merciless, right? Like
yeah, that's, exactly.
That stuff happens. So
Snacks Harrison, is he like part 2.0, like the new Snacks Harrison? There's got to be a new Snacks Harrison out there somewhere for Green Bay. Just going back to offense really quick. I was with PFF. Luke Musgrave was my second lowest graded player on offense in this one. And I think I'm just ready for John Fitzpatrick. And I just don't know what I'm getting out of Musgrave at this point. You're using him almost more as a blocker and he's not good at it. You're not getting anything out of him really as a receiver. I think I just want Fitzpatrick at this point.
I was talking to that bum Pete Bukowski about this and
first steps admitting the problem.
I know. But like so you want Musgrave because you never know when Kraft is gonna go down, right? But as long as Kraft is out there, you're not gonna give Musgrave catches.
Right.
So like do you have him on the 53 and scratch him and just wait for a crack? Like that might not be the worst idea if you're going to have Fitzpatrick kind of be your, run blocker, yep. Stuff like that. Help on special teams. You want Sims up. You obviously want to play on Sims on teams more than Musgrave. Like,
yep.
I don't know. Like, yeah, kind
of. And maybe that sends the message too of like, hey, be better. Like we need more from you as a blocker, as a receiver. Like you're now a healthy scratch on game day. It's just, it sucks that it's got to that point. Cause even as a rookie, there were flashes and it felt like there was something there. Just haven't seen anything. I said a million times this offseason, the idea of Luke Musgrave is better than Luke Musgrave. And I was really hoping, I thought he had a really good camp. They utilized him a lot in practice. He looked fast. I don't know, just hasn't been there in actual games. I do owe him an apology, though. Apparently, I did blame him for the field goal block, and thanks to your education, apparently, I owe new Tennessee Titan tackle Brant Banks the frustration of my special teams. You know, I guess overall frustration.
Yeah, we talking about it. All right,
go for it.
Yeah, that was a surprise to me. I didn't believe it until Matt's presser. And then obviously went back to the video and was like, oh, yeah, I mean, that's exactly what happened. It's kind of a weird situation that played out. Usually on PAT step down, you step down, right? And yep. If you get an overload front, everyone takes the inside threat because that is the fastest path to the kicker and the kick being blocked. So you turn the outside guy loose. Packers didn't do that. Their plan was to intentionally kick that thing out, which Musgrave did, to his credit. And essentially, Brant Banks was supposed to take on a guy with his body and his left arm. And then the free rusher was supposed to come off the D-gap off of his right side. And his job was to stick out an arm completely, you know, straight across, right? Intersecting with that body and just kind of like push it forward with the strength of like his forearm. Kind of worked on the first play, got a piece of it. And even Matt admitted it was like, yeah, that was close to being a block. And then they just ran back out there and did the exact same thing. Brant's arm didn't get out the second time. Obviously, clear run through block. Elton Jenkins on the bench. Mind you, Brant Banks is, I went through it. I looked at the pecking order, the 13th offensive lineman on this team, because we were out six coming into this game. We have three on the injury list and we have three who are out with injury, but on the active roster in this game.
Yep.
This was something that we had talked about last week, Andy, where I was like, hey, offensive line is getting thin. Field goal protection's about to get weird. I wonder if they call up Elton Jenkins. Elton Jenkins is watching the block from the sideline. As soon as that play is done, the following kick after that, Elton Jenkins is off the bench and is playing his first field goal protection snap of the season. This team will never learn its lesson. They're
stupid.
No, it's just like their draft and develop mentality is just so ingrained into the team that they still are like, veterans are going to get a rest. These are our reps to develop our young players. And they just don't care about the results of special teams enough. Like Elton, when you're down six offensive linemen, Elton needs to be in that spot. The special teams isn't like, or I guess field goal protection isn't like offense, defense. You can't motion guys around and sort of pick up your matchups and stuff like that. Like the Dallas Cowboys, if they know you have a weak link up there, they're putting the 2-on-1 on the weak link. And that's what we got. And it was frankly embarrassing. I think after the first snap, Bisaccia should have adjusted his kicks, his kick protection strategy. Because if they knew that was coming, right, and it was, you know, quote unquote close when they used the right technique, you're playing with fire immediately. So I 100% will put that on Bisaccia. But Matt's got to let Bisaccia use some of these players too, man. Between, I think it's really two positions, right, or two phases of the game, because special teams is weird because you can look at it as like one unit or you could look at it as like six, right?
Yep.
Or maybe even more granular than that. I think special teams is relatively actually in a half decent spot outside of field goal protection, which has cost us two wins now, right? I don't think that this is going to be a huge issue moving forward because I think based off of the fact that they waived Banks.
You silly man.
I know. I was worried about it last week, though, right? I know. So I'm, you know, I'm a little bit of Chicken Little too about this type of thing, and I'm not worried. I'm a little bit cool moving forward because I think that they're going to get back some of these offensive linemen. It's going to be less of a big deal, right? Because a Brant Banks isn't going to have to play. And then the other one to me is returner. Savion Williams has gotten 10 kick return attempts. He's taken one past the 30 so far. That's not good. Matthew Golden has gotten 13 punts kicked at him. He's caught five of them.
That's insane.
That's getting dangerous, man.
That's insane.
Like the way that these balls are bouncing on the ground and he's not feeling like it's going to hit one of his teammates' calves and it's going to be a turnover. I know
the
Matt
crazy thing is the crazy thing is I've been at practices where if a returner lets the ball hit the ground, Bisaccia is going ape. Like he is going insane because you let the ball hit the ground. Like it is I've heard it on the sidelines multiple times. Like you don't let the ball hit the ground. You don't let the ball hit the ground. You don't let the ball hit the ground. And obviously it depends maybe on the situation if it's inside the five, whatever, but like he's literally preached. I've seen it in practices. And yet here we are with somebody who does not feel comfortable enough to field the vast majority of the punts that he's back there to field.
Yeah. And hey, you know what would be great, Andy?
If a returner,
you know, well, so like even Matt brought up, he was like, they look great in practice, right? But obviously, you know, the game is a different type of situation and all that stuff. Yeah, for sure. Because, you know, you're not going live. It would have been great to get these guys a return during the preseason. Neither of them got these returns. The only live action you can get without the games mattering, right? And obviously Saban was dealing with injury and stuff, but like Matthew Golden wasn't the guy returning punts. That was correct. It was Mecole Hardman and then Will Shepard. Why did we waste those reps? Why?
I don't know.
You know, so, and it's funny because they should just put Key back there and just fair catch everything, genuinely. Like, that would improve our punt return unit a lot. But I've seen people bring up, like, oh, but he's too important to play. And I'm like, is he? Because we have a first-round pick wide receiver who's starting for us, and he's the guy who's back there returning. And then when he plays bad, it's Keyshawn and Romeo Doubs. The other thing is people being like, well, Keyshawn doesn't want to. Keyshawn worked with the returners this summer. He said to the press that he wanted to do this. And then in gotta have it situations, in the at least the punt game, they put Keyshawn back there. Right. And I think that's another indictment on the team's decision to use personnel in correct situations. And because when things get tough, it's Romeo, it's Keyshawn, it's Jaden Reed, who are back there in the punt game returning things. If you're like, we just got to have the guy catch it right now, right? Yep. But they just keep throwing Golden out in first through third quarters because they're like, well, he needs developmental reps. So he's not the best guy, but he needs developmental reps. And that absolutely is a – buddy, that is a call from the top. I don't know if that is from I don't know. From Goody or LaFleur, I know people get weird when they talk about the structure of the team because they always bring up like what the post-McCarthy Packers plan was. And they're like, no, they're totally separate. And there's, you know, they both report to the president. And it's like, well, in real life, things don't necessarily work like that. But I don't know what side has more influence, whether it's the head coach or front office, but it's definitely one of them. This seems to be a piece of news for people that like special teams coordinators don't just get to use whoever they want.
Correct.
Like if they had it their way, it'd be defensive starters across the board, right? And like Josh Jacobs would be returning kicks. Like that's how this stuff works. I'd talk to coaches when or special teams coaches when I coached during the pandemic season, because I hadn't coached special teams before. So I called a bunch of college guys, some who had experience in the NFL and stuff like that. And like the number one piece of advice I got consistently was like, advocate with your head coach to get the player, like the star players involved on special teams. Don't let them just make you use the backups and stuff. Like that's kind of like the number one part of the job, because you're not practicing special teams a lot.
Not
Andy, special teams preparation looks a whole lot like what we're doing right now, sitting on our asses and talking to each other. There's not a whole lot of it actually being done on the grass. Like you're going to get it done. If it's a home game, it's going to be a Friday walkthrough. You know, you're in shirts and shorts. You're not even really wearing a helmet or anything. If it's an away game, you're doing it in a hotel ballroom. That's what special teams prep looks like in the NFL, especially during the season. So
yeah,
it's a lot of meetings, a lot of talking about it.
Could have been an email based on what I've seen so far. they got to get it fixed. And I'm with you. I don't know that they will. I don't know that they take it seriously enough. The thing that's frustrating is it felt like when they hired Bisaccia, they gave a big contract to Bisaccia. They let him hire two assistants. Yeah. And we have seen, like, this isn't the old situation where your 51st, 52nd, 53rd guy are Tim Boyle, Alex Light, Raven Green, Yosh Nyman, you know, whoever it is, like bottom of the roster, true draft and develop or undraft and develop sort of players where you're just like, well, we don't want to release them. Vernon Scott, et cetera. It, like now those guys are Zane Anderson and Nick Neiman and, you know, in the past, Dallin Leavitt and, you know, Bo Melton. They've basically like reinvented his position so that he could stay on this team as a literal four core special teams guy. And it like they are putting roster positions and money into the coaches and all those sort of things. And it's the same damn stuff. And the stuff that is so frustrating, Justice, is you literally lost a game in week three at the end of the game because of field goal block or field goal block protection. And the very first kick that you have in this game is damn near blocked. And so warning shot, hello, like still a problem. Heads up. Like we're telling you, we're actually giving you the warning ahead of time. This is still an issue. And then you've got like, you know, it's not like Rich had much to do between the time of the one field goal kick and the other field goal kick. There's nothing done between the next one. And now it's a big issue. And obviously Banks is at fault too, not putting his arm up or whatever. But the same thing freaking happens. Like literally three kicks in a row could have been blocked from the end of the Browns game to the two first ones in the Dallas game. That's insane. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, you and I make decisions every day, but on Prize Picks, being right can get you paid. Don't miss any of the excitement this season on Prize Picks, where it is good to be right. Now, Green Bay has a bye in week 5, which is why it's even more thrilling to get in on all the action on Prize Picks. With no home team to cheer for, it's always more exciting when you're cheering on some of your favorite players in Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Jahmyr Gibbs to have a big game in Cincinnati, Derrick Henry to have a monster game on the ground against Houston, and Danny Dimes to bounce back big and get a win against Las Vegas. Now, here's the best part. Prize Picks is the only app that offers stacks, meaning you can pick the same player up to three times in the same lineup. Want to pick more on Josh Allen's passing yards, rushing yards, and touchdowns? Now you can pick all of them in the same lineup only on Prize Picks. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget to use that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. Sports are all about competition. Every snap, every possession, every clutch moment matters. That same energy is what 1v1 me brings to video games. Every single day, you can watch and stake on matchups in Madden, NBA 2K, FC, and Call of Duty Search and Destroy. All the games are streamed live, every match has refs, and payouts are instant. And these aren't just random online lobbies. These are the best players in the scene, pros, streamers, and rivals, with season playoffs and the championship game on the line. Every game matters. Over 100 million has already been paid out on the app, and the community is growing fast. If you're a sports fan, a gamer, or just someone who loves having a little extra on the line, 1v1me is where you need to be. It's not just about winning. It's about the bragging rights, too. Every match has a chat going crazy, and you can back your pick in real time. Download today and use code PACKADAY. Your first stake on the app is risk-free. That's code PACKADAY for a risk-free first stake. Do not miss this opportunity.
It's nuts. And again, I think some of that goes on to Rich too, right?
For sure.
I don't think it's just a personnel decision. That technique is pretty wild. Like, I know I texted an NFL guy. He thought Musgrave blew it, right? Because he was like, why would you kick out in that situation? And then, you know, the LaFleur presser, he's like, yeah, the tight end. And not tight end on the Packers.com roster, right? The actual guy who lines up at tight end at that position in that play is Brent Banks, has to stick his arm out. And I was like, huh. And then I went back and looked at the clips and was like, oh no, it's a pretty weird way to do a 2-on-1. Especially with your, again, 13th offensive lineman in the pecking order. Yeah, they needed a better plan. Matt should have pulled the ripcord there though and been like, screw it, Jenkins is going, like we can't do that again.
It was interesting though, because correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I'm wrong on this, it could very well be the case, didn't they take Musgrave off of the field goal block unit? Yeah. After that though,
they took both of the wings, they took off both of the wings, so Kraft went in and Carl Brooks went in as the wings. Okay.
Interesting.
So I think Carl Brooks technically went in for Musgrave because he plays on the right side.
Where did Jenkins go? Just for Banks?
Yeah. Jenkins went in for Banks directly. Okay. Yes. Yeah. I mean, to your point, special teams, like, they are investing some at that position. It's definitely not like Nyman is the only like special teams only guy, I think, on this team.
Yeah. That's probably true. But like, even like Zane Anderson, Bo Melton, McDuffie, Tyron Hopper. There should be enough, it feels like.
Yes. The problem is none of those guys are on the field on field goal protection, right? So,
do we need to get into the kick return where they set up immediately after you take the big lead and you get it to midfield following that play too? Because that one is just as frustrating.
So that play was Javon Buller just ran into his own guy. He ran into Nyman on that play. So doesn't happen often. That sucked when you get basically a 2-for-1 block for them. But for the most part, like, I'm not worried about outside of the returners and outside of field goal protection. I'm not really worried about special teams that much. As weird as that sounds. Now, obviously those are two pretty big areas of improvement. I think, again, field goal protection is going to fix itself. Returners, I just don't know if we're ever going to be good there, man. Like, we're just – so, like, Turpin, right, is 153 pounds. The first 2 years that he spent in Dallas, he was just basically a return specialist, did nothing else. We're never going to do that. Like, the Packers are just not ever going to even allocate the roster spot for a returner only 153-pound wide receiver. Like, we got six guys on the team right now, and Matt had no use for Mecole Hardman, right? And Hardman is a pretty big guy as far as a return specialist type of guy goes. So Matt wants him, you know, like 205 pounds and bigger, man. And it's hard to find returners who are that. So that's why I think that they're pretty desperate to figure this thing out with Matthew Golden and eventually get him to be a solid punt returner. But he's not there right now.
Apparently they should have drafted DK for who the Titans got in the third round. He's got 25.2 yard average on kick returns with a long of 71, 16.3 yard average on punt returns, and he's 6'1", 196. So there was your guy. That's apparently who they should have taken.
Who is this? DK? Oh,
yeah. Badger, Florida. And then he was the fourth round pick. I think he would have been there when they took Williams, technically. I like Williams, so I'm not complaining about that in particular, but apparently that was the guy. Kick return, punt return, and he's 6'1", 196. Also has five catches on the season for 2 yards, although that's not great.
Yeah, Tennessee's not doing great right now.
Yeah, no, not a good football team. All right, let's say, like, in totality, now that we know the special teams, let's say, work in progress, how are you viewing the state of this team through 4 weeks? 2-1-1 somehow, some way, in the most bizarre fashion possible. How are you feeling overall about the state of the team?
I guess we could take like position by position, right? Like quarterback, thumbs up. Running back, not worried about it. Josh Jacobs is getting a lot of yards after contact still. Wide receiver, relatively all right. The Golden play where he broke off his route and just attacked a ball that was not meant for him.
Wicks broke it off. Golden was intended. So Wicks was the one who broke it off. Wicks is on the outside. And yeah. Matt LaFleur talked about how, you know, in that situation, if you see that there's no safety over the top and a receiver or a corner sits on it or whatever, you can kind of put your hand up and like go down the field. You can see on the route, like Wicks is on the outside. He makes the adjustment. He throws the flag up. And then he goes down. Golden was running down the field the entire time. I don't think he made any adjustment on it.
Wow. I would have thought it was the other way around because it looked like scissors or something to me. And then Golden was just like, nah, that's a ball. I'm going for it. It's like, God, gosh, dang it, man.
Well, the crazy thing is there's nobody on Golden on the play. He's going to go and Wicks brings the defender with him. So if Wicks sits and the corner stays with him. And that's what I think LaFleur was talking about of how, if he doesn't go with him, if Wicks doesn't make that adjustment, it's going to be a touchdown because Golden, there's no safety over the top. And I think it's a linebacker, maybe it's a linebacker safety. I forget who it is. Who's chilling in that zone and nobody goes with him. And the corner is with Wicks. And then Wicks throws the flag up. The corner goes with Wicks. And then the corner makes the play on Golden because Wicks took him with him.
Yeah. I feel solid at wide receiver. You know, Romeo's playing some pretty good football right now. And I know that's easy to say after three touchdowns, stuff like that, but he's not, like, he was kind of reduced to a role over like the past 2 years where it's just like make the tough catches, right? But now he's like doing stuff downfield.
Yeah, he's been good.
I like what Romeo's been able to do. Offensive line wise, feeling okay, considering that Aaron Banks and Zach Tom haven't been able to finish a game this season, right? On that relative scale, feeling all right. Like, it seems like we know now, hey, Jordan Morgan, don't play him at right tackle. It would have been great to go into the whole season with that mentality. At least we learned our lesson.
Hopefully.
D-line, well, on the ends, I'm feeling good. D-tackle is my red flag and has been, you know, my siren since cutdowns where I'm like, this can get real bad real quick.
Yeah.
Linebacker, like, Cooper had some iffy games. Not bad. Quay's done some iffy stuff, especially in this game, I think, in particular. Still think overall they've probably had good years. But Quay definitely got messed up in this game. I'm hoping to see a bounce back from him.
Yeah.
Corner, I'm a little worried about it at this point. Opposite of Nixon. Safety, totally good. So I'm really worried about like D tackle and outside corner too at this point. And then otherwise, you know, I kind of trust the talent of this team. So I'm feeling pretty good. I mean, we pissed down our leg two games in a row, and that's the only reason we're not 4-0 right now, right? So I know things feel horrendous, but the good news is we shot ourselves in the foot, and we have another foot. And as long as we just don't shoot ourselves on that one, we should be okay.
We got a lot of bullets left. Don't sleep easy yet. There's a lot of
poor trigger discipline. Yeah, all of it.
I'll say this. I'm a little bit more concerned about the O-line, I think, than you. Defensive tackle, again, I just feel like they need like a number four guy. And if they can get like just one more rotational piece, I'm good. I think corner's going to be okay. I think the pass rush is good enough to cover for some of it. Although we did see in this game, the pass rush doesn't get home. There are certainly some concerns. So, but I actually think offensive line and then that defensive tackle spot are the two that are, to me, the ones that stand out a little bit more.
I think one of the weird things too, like people just don't know what to do with a quarterback playing very well. And people are so weird about Dak that it's like, he doesn't get the credit for it. Sometimes
I'm a Dak guy.
I'm a huge Dak guy.
I love regular season Dak. Postseason Dak still is a work in progress, but regular season Dak is freaking awesome.
He's moving in the pocket. He's evading pass rushers. Some of the pass rushers are getting there. From a progression standpoint, great job. Like, it's just kind of hard to play against a guy who's just always going to be on time and is going to make some pretty good decisions. Obviously, Pickens has had a couple nice plays, and like, that dude's a freak. I understand that he hasn't made all pro lists and stuff like that, but like at SB Nation, we had like interviewed, I think, multiple Georgia Bulldogs. And I remember guys like N'Kobe Dean and stuff on those championship teams. We'd ask him like, who's the best player you ever played, you know, at the college level. And they're like, oh, my teammate, wide receiver, George Pickens. Like, he is insane. He is the best player. And that's, you know, a team that had like Jordan Davis on it. Right. And like, Jalen Carter. If you want to go. Yeah. Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith. Right. If you want to go on like just like the freak body type thing, right? Like Darnell Washington was on that team. You know, Bowers was on that team, and they're all like consensus across the board. They're like, no, George
Pickens.
George is the best player that I've seen, whether it's my teammate or someone that we went against on these title runs. And I'm like, that's pretty nuts. But I kind of get it. So
he's a stud if he can just kind of stay out of his own way sometimes.
He's
an absolute stud when he wants to be, that's for sure. I know you wrote as well. We've talked a little bit about a couple of these players, but you wrote about the free agency class, and it's not exactly been great so far. The two cheap ones, Hardman and Simmons, are, of course, gone, not on the roster anymore. The two expensive ones, Aaron Banks and Nate Hobbs, as you've mentioned, have struggled to stay healthy. And when they've been on the field, the results haven't exactly been encouraging so far. I think this is a big thing. I think they are going to need, I think that, like, I don't need Pro Bowl play from either of them, but both of them need to be solid starters for this team to really kind of hit their ceiling.
Yeah.
And so far that's been a bit of an issue.
Yeah, for sure. And when we're talking about a team that is going to push cap hits moving forward, right? The thing about these cap hits is if you're doing salary conversions, it really only makes sense to do them as long as you want to stretch out these contracts. And for those contracts to be stretched out, you have to want to carry that guy on your roster for multiple years. Once these guys go bust, you don't want to stretch out and convert their salary and all that stuff, right? Because you end up net at the end, you know, within a year, you're paying the same amount of salary cap. So why does it even matter, right? So these contracts become obstacles. And yeah, they definitely need Hobbs and Banks to become starters for this team. And at least net neutral type of starters.
Yep.
Could that money have gone to, because the problem with free agency, right, is, or really it's just cap space in general. Like, people don't look at like the opportunity cost. So like Nate Hobbs and Banks, if you don't sign them, it's probably not a free agent that you go after. It's probably like, oh, do we give Rashid Walker an extension? Do we give Quay Walker the extension? Does Romeo Doubs get the extension? And would those things have been a better use of money, cap space, signing bonus, whatever, however you want to do it? I think the team wanted to infuse talent at the guard position without moving to center. Corner, I don't know if they needed to do it. I mean, they probably would have needed to draft another guy at minimum. I think they were priced out of the top corners, right?
Yep.
And that's why they had to go down the route of Hobbs, who was basically paid as a slot because that's what he had done with the Raiders, and they were hoping to make him an outside cornerback. I was never a huge fan of those moves. I understood why they did them, but I wasn't, like, by no means was I excited in the same way when they got McKinney and Josh Jacobs. Like, I was like, yo, let's go. I can't believe they let us have these players. I was like, oh, I guess I get what you're doing, but like, Banks had injury history and stuff like that coming in and had kind of been a hot and cold type of guard for the Niners for 4 years. Yep. I know he was a second round pick, but he's like something like the eighth highest paid guard in football right now. And then Hobbs, you paid him top of the market. You reset the market at the slot position, which is fine if you want to play him in the slot. They have seem to have no intent on really playing him in the slot. They want to play Bullard there. So you're paying top of the market slot corner money to convert a guy's position in year five. A little shaky, especially after, you know, he had the meniscus issue and stuff like that. Don't know if there's some buyer's remorse there at this point, but definitely not best case scenario.
It is not. I'm somewhat hopeful that both of those players can bounce back. When I did the tape study of Banks and San Fran, again, not a world beater, but like a solid offensive guard. Like they could use a solid offensive guard, like not a negative guard. Like you put him out there and you're fine, right? Like he's somebody that you can win with, certainly not because of, but then yeah, like in this one game, he certainly did not look that way. If he can play like he did last year in San Fran when he was healthy, like he'll be a value add on that. And like Hobbs looked really good in camp. I know it's just camp, it's just practice, whatever. It's not the be all end all, but he looked way better in camp than he did look at any point in those, what we've seen from him in the regular season so far. Again, it's just practice, whatever, but I don't know. I'm remaining semi hopeful.
The injury, I'm definitely willing to give a lot more leash to Hobbs with the procedure that he had done and stuff like that than Banks, because it kind of looks similar to what I had seen from Banks in the past, which is not, again, not bad. It's just
not damn, that much
funny to be okay.
Not what you were hoping for, to say the least. Next quarter of the season is interesting. Obviously, we have the bye this week, but the four games following: Bengals at home, at Cardinals, at Steelers, Panthers at home. It feels like, Justice, that this is a very winnable four games for Green Bay. How are you feeling, and what do you want to see in this next quarter of the season?
Yeah, I mean, they should smother Cincinnati.
Yep.
Passing game is bad right now. Offensive line has been horrendous. I think they're running for like 2 yards a carry or something like that. It's not been good on the Bengals offensive side. Joe Burrow will not be returning for the Super Bowl. Spoiler alert, Bengals aren't going to be there. Defense hasn't really been good either. They're not getting much out of Shamar Stewart. He's been banged up and stuff like that too. I think Trey Hendrickson is leading the team with like two TFLs or something like that when I checked. It's not been good. They get some picks from their safeties. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Who is it? Cardinals after that. Cardinals are a weird team. Like, yeah, we'll see what the status of like the Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison Jr. connection is like by week seven, because that thing is like a roller coaster right now. I definitely think that there's ways to take advantage of that team, though. They play real light on defense. You can get after them a little bit.
Yeah.
Steelers is going to feel like a Super Bowl no matter what. Throw the records out, all that stuff. They're a big check down team right now. Like, they're not really throwing the ball deep. But Rodgers can get the ball out really quick, and he's still very accurate right now, even though he can't move. So that obviously is going to feel like a Super Bowl just because of the stakes of the Packers v. Rodgers 1.0. maybe only 0.0, right? And then Panthers, like, I'm not worried about it. We should be able to take advantage of Bryce Young.
Yep.
None of these guys got Dak Prescott at quarterback right now, with all due respect to whatever Aaron's doing right now. And understand he's still got a little left in the tank, but Dak's operating at a little bit of a different level than any of these guys.
No, I totally agree. I'm very optimistic about this next quarter of the season. Now, granted, I was very optimistic about Cleveland and Dallas in those two games, and that did not exactly go according to plan. So, as you said, if they can just not shoot themselves in the leg, foot, or any other appendage, I feel really good about this. But obviously, they're going to have to go out and do it, and I need them to go out and do it. I need a little bit of I need a nice little run here so we can get off the panic mode and just, you know, enjoy this next portion of the season. That's what I'm hoping for, Justice. We'll be right back. Hey friends, football season is here, and that means you're going to want to have a VPN set up to make sure that you are ready to watch the right sporting events that aren't always available in your region. I'll be honest with you guys. A few years ago, I didn't even know what a VPN was. Now, I use my VPN daily for a variety of different reasons, including protecting my private data, changing my browsing location, and having the best premium cybersecurity at all times. And that's why I use NordVPN. NordVPN is the fastest VPN in the world, which means no buffering or lagging while streaming. Plus, world-class cybersecurity, the ability to utilize it on up to 10 different devices, and a VPN that I know is going to work every single time. There's simply no better choice than NordVPN. So here's what you need to do. Go to nordvpn.com/packer to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan. That link, nordvpn.com/packer, will also give you 4 extra months on their 2-year plan. There's zero risk with NordVPN's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the podcast episode description. So what are you waiting for? Go to nordvpn.com/packer today and get NordVPN right now.
I want to, before we get out of here, I want to touch on the weird Brant Banks of it all.
Let's do it. This is what you and I were meant to do, is talk about the weird Brant Banks of it all.
All right. So Packers are banged up. They're out 6 offensive linemen. They call up Brant Banks to the active roster. Why do they do that? They could have just used him off the practice squad and called him up, right? They only used one of those call-ups this past game on Lucetus Smith, the other offensive lineman that they had active. I guess from the PS, they didn't want to exhaust his second practice squad elevation. So their plan was, we'll bring him up to the 53. Then we could take him back down to the practice squad and have 2 more elevations for the remainder of the season. And then there was also the issue of the Cleveland Browns needed a tackle because Daywon Jones went on injured reserve, and his offensive line coach, or his head coach, Blumgren at Rice, is the offensive line coach for the Cleveland Browns. So you move him up to the 53, you protect him from being a practice squad poach, all that stuff. You preserve the practice squad, the second of 3 practice squad call-ups during the season. Cool. Perfect. The Browns end up trading for Cam Robinson, right? So, hey, coast is clear. We can waive Banks now. And no one's going to, you know, claim him. Nope. Tennessee Titans pick him up. And that's a really interesting situation. So I don't know. So it's interesting that the Titans picked him up off of waivers, but didn't poach him off of the practice squad. And that's because if you poach him off the practice squad, you have to guarantee him 3 weeks, at least minimum salary. And even it, you could cut him, right? But you still have to hold that roster spot on the 53. Yeah. Well, if you pick him up off of waivers, you don't have to do that. So it kind of played right into the Titans' hands. So such a weird situation where they really try to protect this guy from getting poached by the Browns, try to preserve his practice squad call up, and then he ends up he's Tennessee Titan right now. So the Packers have 2 practice squad offensive linemen. It's Dalton Cooper, pick up after cutdowns from the Kansas City Chiefs, and then Lasita Smith, who is on his 4th stint with Green Bay and re-signed with the team this past week.
I don't know, maybe you have inside information. Do you know that for sure the Browns were trying to poach him off the practice squad?
I do not know that, but I do. Yeah. The Blomgren coached at Stanford. Yeah. And like I've said many times before, I have way too many Stanford people in my life. So I've been very aware that he's at the NFL level now. And I was always, it just made a lot of sense.
So a couple things that are interesting to me, there have been like over the past week and a half, there have been, I think, three or four offensive tackles and offensive guards and tackles, mostly tackles, poached from other teams off of practice squads. So this has been like, it's been happening a lot. And like you said, Cam Robinson got traded. So teams are like actively looking. I wonder if Green Bay got, again, a hint last week that there were at least people that were looking around for offensive linemen, maybe the Browns and maybe other teams too. And so again, wanted to make sure that they had him with as short as they were on offensive line that put him on it. What I'm intrigued by is they don't need the, I guess if you're, all right, maybe you know this, maybe you don't. If you're on the active roster for the bye week, is that a paid week? Is that one where you're actually like,
I don't does think that so. Count? It's game checks.
It's game checks, right? So
yeah,
you don't, there's no advantage to releasing him now. If anything, wait another week. The other thing I would say too is like, if you're going to do it on like Saturday or whatever, or like the Friday, like the right before the regular season week. And then it gets a little bit more of like, are you going to claim him right before the game and things like that? There's just a little bit more ways that you can kind of like game that up to try to protect him a little bit more. Just was weird that they were like, you know, early in the week, yep, we're cutting them. I guess maybe they just thought they were going to get them back, but clearly they did not. Maybe they didn't care. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, maybe it was because of the field goal protection and all that stuff. But I, as far as I know, Cooper is a guard, right?
Dalton Cooper, I believe, is a guard.
Yeah, so they don't have a tackle on the practice squad right now. So things are getting a little thin real quick there, too.
Caleb Jones coming back. I think Kadeem Telford's gone. I think he's on somebody's practice squad. Who else do they have? I thought there was somebody else, but yeah, I don't know. There's not much.
I mean, if things get real bad, like Issa Pola is like on, well, no, he's a Jet now, right?
He's a Jet, he's active roster. I really liked him too. I was surprised KC cut him, to be honest, but yeah, the Jets, he's been inactive every week, but he's on the Jets.
Yeah. I don't know. If you really need it, put the screws to the,
okay.
Just
for whatever it's worth, I thought Cooper was a guard too on the Packers roster. They do have him listed as a tackle, and he is 6'6", 326. So there you go.
Okay.
I guess they consider him a tackle.
Cool.
As long as they can do it. Maybe they do. Maybe they don't. I don't know. You never know with them. Like they had.
I know Lucidus isn't playing tackle. I know that.
Yeah. They have Jonathan Baldwin as a corner for the all of training camp, despite him lining up at safety and working with the safety group every single day in training camp. So you never quite know with their roster, but he is listed as a tackle on the roster for whatever it's worth. All right, Justice, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, other than special teams wise, right? Seen a whole lot of fire Bisaccia. Yeah, you guys are frustrated, all that stuff. This team still isn't, again, whether it's game day decisions where they're not putting their best players in the best situations, or just personnel wise where they're just not investing a whole lot, where, you know, hey, you know, Aaron Mosby isn't on this team this year, right? And situations like that. We don't have a real returner on this team who has any sort of experience outside of Keyshawn. We're not playing Keyshawn. Like, you guys know what it will look like if we fire Rich, right? We're just going to do an internal hire.
Yeah.
And the team is going to throw their hands up and say special teams is more trouble than it's worth. And we're going to be 32nd again. Like, this team is so focused on the draft and develop stuff that I don't know what the special team stuff is going to look like during this title push. You know, I see all the stats and it's like Packers are like 32nd basically every year since their Super Bowl. It's like, yeah, well, 2011 is when the CBA rules changed up and you changed all the practice rules and stuff like that. And you don't have the time for draft and develop guys in the same way that you did in off seasons. And the team hasn't really adjusted at all. So that's a thought, right? The other thing too is like, if you go to market for a special teams coordinator and they realize you just fired Bisaccia, who has gotten head coaching interviews since that he's been here. He's had several decades of success, Super Bowl winner, all that stuff. What kind of a special teams coordinator do you think that you're going to get? Because I think those special teams coordinators are going to be like, oh, they really let Bisaccia out to dry.
This would be his fourth special teams coordinator if they fired Bisaccia. He's had three defensive coordinators and two offensive coordinators, which isn't bad from an offensive coordinator standpoint, but that is what, two, five, that'd be nine coordinators in his tenure so far. Like it's a lot of coordinators for one coach. Only one of which was poached due to a promotion, which was Hackett. Everyone else would have been fired. So yeah, not ideal. And that you do have to be cognizant of that. So it sounds like what you're telling me, Justice, you are anti-fire Bisaccia. So clearly that must mean you're pro-fire LaFleur.
No, I'm pro the team getting its head out of its butt so you don't get this thing bleeped. And realizing that, like, when you're down six offensive linemen, you have to play Elton Jenkins. And you're getting killed on returns right now between Golden not fielding the ball and Savion watching the ball drop at the 1 yard line and then kneeling in the end zone and costing you basically 10 yards on three different returns with Brandon Aubrey. Like, that's killing you, dude. It's killing you.
Fix it.
You got to use the players. Like, championship level teams on special teams, I understand people who are like, I'm not advocating for Rashawn Gary and Micah Parsons to play on punt rush, right? I understand you don't want him doing that. I don't think that's a plus EV move. I don't even think Elton needs to be out there in the Bengals game if you have the offensive lineman back. Like,
right.
But when you're down six, you got to be able to recognize, like, we need the bodies here. Down six offensive linemen. They're just in a, like, Cooper DeJean is a critical player for the Philadelphia Eagles. Right, he was NFL top 100, all that stuff. They had him returning punts all last season.
Yep,
and they were cool with it. Like, that's what it takes to be a championship team on the special teams front, right? Richard Sherman was like a four-time All-Pro and was still playing the punt jammer for the Seattle Seahawks when they were trying to chase titles there, right? Yep. Penei Sewell is playing field goal protection. And it's not like the Lions can't afford Sewell to go down in any way that is different than the Packers and Elton Jenkins. Just like, they're so adverse to playing their players. And it's cost them two games. Or I don't really put it on the Browns game, personnel-wise, because it was a got-to-have-it situation, and they actually played the right player. Like, Tucker Kraft came off the bench and stuff like that.
Right.
But in the Cowboys game, it really killed him. And I just don't know how much you can do the got to have it special teams personnel stuff where you're only playing these guys in the fourth quarter. Cause you never, like, got to have it sounds great, but they didn't know that they had to have it, you know, on the second PAT of the game against the Dallas Cowboys. And that ends up being the difference maker in the game, right? Between flipping it from a win to a tie. So
also late in that game. Late in that game, when you absolutely have to have it in overtime and when you're having Savion return late in the game too, you've got to have it. Why is Keyshawn not back there in those moments where it's like game on the line, end of game, overtime? You have an all-pro returner, an all-pro kick returner, and in a must-have-it situation, got to have it, you're down, you got to get back in the game. There's 30 seconds left in the game and you're down by a field goal. And Keyshawn's not back there. What are we doing? What are we possibly doing? That makes no sense. I didn't even think of that part of it. That makes absolutely no sense.
Draft and develop, baby. We got to justify Savion being on the 58-man roster beyond being just Matt's gadget player, right? So he has to have some sort of a role. They tried it as a punt gunner. It didn't work. So he's going to stick as a returner, and we got to make it work there. It doesn't make sense to me, man. Just play the players. Sorry. I know it sounds dumb and people are going to get on my butt.
No, it sounds it's like the injuries and all of this stuff. It sounds like total common sense. It sounds like complete and utter common sense. And it's stupid that it's not done that way. But what can you do? Except hopefully get better from here on out. Justice, I cannot thank you enough. Special teams are stupid. Where can we find all of your work?
AcuratePacketCompany.com. Again, have the cut-ups of have the breakdown of the field goal stuff. Have cut-ups of all the returns if you guys want to watch those things on video. Have cut-ups of the Nasir Stackhouse stuff, both versus run and pass, so you guys can check that out. The detailed snap counts, any of the news that is coming through. I got you covered. I've been basically working nonstop since that game kicked off. So
you are a legend, my friend. We appreciate you more than you know. Go follow him on social media at JUMOSQ and on acmepackingcompany.com. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.